Hi, everyone. My name is Rohan Gupta, and I'm a senior at Washington University in St. Louis. Over the past year, I've been working in analytics for Rapsodo, and today I'll be talking about what we've been working on. So, for those of you that don't know about Rapsodo, we're a sports technology company focused on player development through data. Our product is a device that allows players to visualize and capture their movement of the ball, whether it's for hitting or pitching. Today, I'll be focusing on pitching. On the screen, you see an example of our user interface and the output that a pitcher might see after throwing a pitch in the bullpen. This includes data such as the speed, spin, true spin, spin efficiency, break, and trajectory of the ball. So currently, scouting is fairly subjective, based largely on the eye test. Teams grade players on certain tools according to the 20-80 scale, where 50 is major league average and 10 represents one standard deviation. In particular, pitchers are graded by each of their pitch types, as well as other overarching descriptive qualities, such as command, pitchability, deception, and arm action. This method has several drawbacks. Primarily, each scout may have different grading standards. One scout's 55 may be another's 60. Even when data is used in grading, it's limited in scope. The table you see here is from an article published in 2014 by Kylie McDaniel on Fangraphs. He also noted that while fastball velocity is used as a starting point, other pieces of information may be used to grade the pitcher up or down a notch or two. Intuitively, we understand that certain pitches are effective or ineffective regardless of their velocity alone. For example, we perceive David Robertson's fastball to be consistently effective despite its low 90s speed, and Joe Kelly's to be somewhat hittable despite being 100 miles per hour. So it makes sense to formalize these other components. To create our pitch score, we wanted to be able to predict the likelihood of a swinging strike, since we wanted to best measure a pitcher's stuff in terms of his ability to deceive and overpower hitters. We ultimately did so using a series of logistic regression models that included variables for pitch type, velocity, and movement. We also tried to use a measure of command, but found out that it wasn't significant in measuring swinging strikes. After creating the models, we were able to generate an expected swinging strike rate, which we then converted to the 20-80 scale for our pitch score. Ultimately, swinging strikes are valuable in that they lead to strikeouts. So to test our new metric, we considered a few key measures. First, is it reliable from season to season? We looked at all pitcher seasons from 2008 to 2018 and examined how each metric correlated to itself from year X to year X plus one. We found that the pitch score is more reliable from year to year than either swinging strike rate or strikeout rate. In addition, we looked at predictiveness and descriptiveness. Predictiveness is how well each metric predicts strikeout rate the next year, while descriptiveness is how well each metric correlates to swinging strike in the current year. While the pitch score isn't as predictive or descriptive as simply using the swinging strike or strikeout rate, it's competitive enough that we believe the reliability is especially important given how our product is used. The device is used from MLB to college to high school to youth baseball across many different environments. Since the pitch score is based on pitches, on the qualities of the pitches alone, we believe it can be used as an equalizer across these environments. It's important to note that the measures in these tables are based on MLB only. So while strikeout rate might predict itself better than pitch score in MLB, pitch score may be better suited to evaluate a pitcher moving from, say, the Pacific Coast League to MLB. Here are some of the league leaders in pitch score in 2018. It's also important to note that while we're using the 20-80 scale, we're not capping values at 20 or 80. Just like a normal distribution, you'd expect a few pitchers each year to break the boundaries of three standard deviations. I'll give you guys a couple seconds to look over the table. It's also value in that the pitch score is used for every single pitch, so we can build up a strong sample size very quickly, rather than relying on other metrics where the denominator is batters faced or innings pitched. This is crucial, especially in player development, where we need to be able to diagnose problems and track improvements in real time. One of my favorite improvements came from Wade Davis between 2013 and 2014, when he actually developed from a very average starter to a dominant reliever. This is actually the best year-over-year improvement in pitch score since 2008, when you can see pitch scores that are in the low 50s, even in the 45s, to going to the 60s by the next year. We also wanted to visualize and quantify the interaction between a player's pitch types. In defining which pitch types to include in a player's repertoire, we used a minimum of 5% usage. This is based on a study by Ben Lindbergh over at Grantland in 2015 that concluded that 5% is significant in affecting a player's performance. We looked at four different categories, which we call the pitch matrices: location, movement, release, and velocity. First is the movement matrix. We form the movement matrix by taking the average horizontal and vertical break values of each pitch type, then forming the convex hull polygon that connects them. We measure this by calculating the perimeter of the polygon. So if you look at the movement matrix on the screen, it's Mike Fiers, who had a pretty good year in 2018, and he also had the largest movement matrix in the league over the course of that year. You may be wondering why we don't fill in the polygon and just take the area, which would be a good question. The reason is that if we looked at the area alone, we'd be treating one pitch pitchers the same as two pitch pitchers, and we'd be treating all two pitch pitchers the same. But we can also see that it's possible to create enormous differences in movement, even with two pitches. We see Rich Hill do that here. And we want to give pitchers that have two pitches credit for being able to differentiate their pitches very widely, as Rich Hill is able to do with his fastball and his curveball. Most importantly, the movement matrix can be used as a visualization tool to aid in player development. In particular, it can be used to either identify weak pitches that could be more effective with a better break profile, or in pitch design to create a new pitch that complements the current offerings well. Trevor Bauer is a great example of this, as he's spoken about publicly. He's increased his movement matrix in each of the last three seasons, and you can see the stark difference between 2015 and 2018. Since 2015, he's increased the vertical drop of his curveball. He's lowered the vertical rise of his cutter so that it's strictly a horizontal pitch, and he's developed a slider that mirrors his changeup to the opposite side. As you know, the on-field improvements for Bauer have been very noticeable, as he had a 2.21 FIP last year. On the other hand, we also have the release matrix. If you imagine the ideal pitch tunnel, you would want all your release points to be the same, so you'd be able to create, while on the movement side, you'd want the movement to come in any direction, sort of like a cone. Steven Strasburg, a Rapsodo user, had one of the best release matrices in 2018. On this diagram, you see a bunch of pitches holed up in one spot, and there's actually five different pitch types in there, which allows him to create effective pitch tunnels between his five pitches. On the other hand, a large release matrix is the earliest indicator a hitter has that a different pitch is coming. James Shields had one of the worst of these last year, and while this is somewhat intentional given that he tries to lower his arm slot in some cases, this would be a red flag for most pitchers if you spotted something like this in the bullpen on their data. For the location matrix, we consider doing the same thing as we did with movement and release, which is connecting the average coordinates of each pitch type, and we decided against that for reasons that I'll get to in the next slide. Instead, we decided to measure the minimum distance from the pitch location to each corner of the strike zone. This is based on the idea that at any corner of the strike zone, the pitch is a strike, but it also has the highest odds of generating a swinging strike. At the same time, you also miss hard contact by missing the middle of the plate. If you look at it through a game theory lens, if the pitch is a strike, you prefer to move incrementally closer to the corner to avoid hard contact. If it's a ball, you'd also want to throw it closer to the corner to avoid the likelihood that it would be called a ball. So the natural equilibrium here is that you would want to throw a pitch closer to the strike zone, in particular the corners. Of course, there's a few drawbacks to this method. First, we're not measuring intent here, so we have no idea where the pitcher is trying to throw the ball, and we're just taking the minimum distance to any corner. The second is that while the pitch is technically a strike in the corner, in reality, we're taking this as a given, when in fact, there's actually lower odds of being called a strike at the corners. This is due to external factors such as the catcher and the umpire, but in our case, we'll ignore this for now. Finally, we're treating a pitch 2 inches off the inside of the plate, for example, the same as two inches off the corner of the strike zone outside of the strike zone. In further analysis, we would separate these two cases and treat them differently. Still, we found that a pitcher's average location score is actually a valuable metric. It's actually far more predictive of walk rate than walk rate itself, and much more reliable. Here, you can see why we discarded the idea of a location perimeter, which is less predictive and less descriptive. Finally, the velocity matrix is the simplest of the four metrics. It's just the weighted standard deviation of the velocities, which we then convert to the 2080 scale like everything else. Here are some of the league leaders in mixing speeds last year, which I'll leave on the screen for a couple seconds. Finally, with our pitch score and four matrices, we wanted to come up with an overall metric that evaluates a pitcher based on nothing but his pitch characteristics, independent of his team, defense, or anything else. We actually came up with two. The first, RAP score, is very simple. It's just the weighted average of the five metrics, with pitch score getting half of the weight, and the matrices also equally getting half of the weight. We put this on the 2080 scale. The second, which we call RERA, is a linear model incorporating the metrics and scale to look like your traditional ERA or FIP. When we get down to it, RAP score and RERA aren't necessarily more predictive or descriptive of FIP than the current metrics. It has about the predictive power that you'd expect from ERA or WHIP, which, if you're in this room, you probably understand is full of noise. But again, we go back to the reliability factor here. Since they're based only on the pitch qualities themselves, RAP score and RERA should translate well, if not better than those metrics across a wide variety of environments. For example, we even have, say, Little League pitchers who use Rapsodo. They won't be able to calculate their FIP, but in reality, what they care about is the quality of their pitch rather than the environment of the team. Finally, here are your league leaders in RAP score and RERA in 2018. There's slight differences, so it's a matter of preference, and I only included starters in this table just because it's a little more interesting to look at. But some of the examples of top RAP scores and RERAs for relievers were Dellin Betances, Aroldis Chapman, and Ryan Stanek. Thank you for your time, and I'd love to answer any questions. Okay, sounds good. Thank you.